Mother's Day is almost here. Have you found that truly special sentimental gift for your mom yet? Don't worry, I got you. MyLifeInABook.com is a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you want to ask. And then she can either type her response or use their voice-to-text feature, and MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges that she overcame. This book becomes a legacy, something you and your children can treasure forever. Your mom has given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. I loved this idea so much that I've started my own My Life in a Book for my children to have. The thought of my son and daughter being able to learn about my life story as they grow into their own adulthood is truly special. It's been an enjoyable journey of self-reflection for me too, with questions like, which one event made the greatest impact on your life? It's brought back memories I didn't even know I had. I love it, and I know your mother will too. Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code SERIALNAPPER at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use code SERIALNAPPER for 10% off today. Hey everyone, my name is Nikki Young, and this is Serial Napper, the number one true crime podcast for naps. I'm back with another true crime story to lull you to sleep, or perhaps to give you nightmares. Life was not always easy for 20-year-old Buffalo, New York native Amanda Wankowski. At one point, her friends and family had to watch her struggle with an addiction that had her spending time with undesirable people on the wrong side of town. But she was really trying to get her life back on track, even enrolling in a criminal justice course at her local community college. However, on the evening of December 5th, 2008, her life was cut short. According to Adam Patterson, one of the last people to see her alive, Amanda was dropped off that night at Antoine Garner's home, which was located in a really dangerous neighborhood. She was supposed to be home later that evening, but when a few days passed and she had failed to return, her mother reported her missing to the police. They interviewed Adam Patterson, the man who had allegedly dropped her off at Garner's home, and he said he initially was going to wait for her to return to the car, but she called and told him that he could leave, so he did. However, Antoine Garner, the man Amanda was supposed to be seeing that evening, claimed she only stayed for a few minutes, maybe 10 to 15, and then left with Patterson. Their stories did not match up, and investigators believed Amanda may have been a victim of foul play. Then, approximately 5 weeks later, the police received an anonymous tip pointing them to Amanda's body in a garbage bin. She was discovered nude, face down, with her hair shaved off, and she was covered in lacerations and bruises. What looked like an apparent murder would be ruled an accidental opiate overdose, sparking a decades-long fight between Amanda's family and the Buffalo Police Department. It has been over 15 years since Amanda's battered body was found in that garbage bin, and her family continues to push to have her manner of death changed to homicide. Many believe that there is police corruption and a cover-up at play. And once we go through the details, I think you'll see why. So let's jump right in. I want to take particular care in the way that I speak about Amanda, because it's evident that because of her past struggles, the story of her death, it just hasn't received the attention, and it definitely hasn't sparked the outrage that it deserves. It is no secret that 20-year-old Amanda Wankowski had battled with a serious heroin addiction, an expensive drug of choice that led her to turn to sex work in order to support that addiction. But she was so much more than some of her darkest moments. She was a beautiful young woman with long blonde hair, a daughter, and friend to many. On the Justice for Amanda Winkowski Facebook group, her mother described her as her baby girl who, quote, grew up so quickly and was my best friend. Her love for life was larger than life. Her love for people was unbelievable. Her smile, her crystal baby blue eyes, her laugh, my Amanda, what I would do just to hear Ma, oh my God, she always put a smile on your face. The most amazing thing in life is I was her mom. Her family believed that shortly before her disappearance, she was trying to get her life together. She had been trying to get clean from heroin and was working at a bar called Cocktail Bob's. She had even enrolled in several criminal justice courses at Niagara County Community College. Her mother would say that she dreamed of one day becoming a corrections officer, but she struggled to shake her addiction and all of the elements that came with living that kind of lifestyle. Amanda's roommate was a much older man named Adam Patterson, who was said to be old enough to be her father. They lived together on the Tuscarora Reservation. Patterson was known by the police to be involved in drug trafficking and sex work, and I have read in some sources that at times he acted as Amanda's pimp. Living with a man like that, it would have been damn near impossible for her to stop using heroin all on her own. And so it is said that on the evening of December 5th, 2008, when Amanda received a call from Patterson while she was working the bar at Cocktail Bob's, it was to facilitate a drug deal. Heroin in exchange for sex. Amanda got another bartender to cover her shift, and Patterson picked her up out front. The client Amanda would be seeing that night was a man named Antoine Garner, who lived in East Buffalo. Garner was a large man weighing around 300 pounds who would have towered over the very petite Amanda. When they get to the house, Amanda jumps out while Patterson says he stays parked, waiting for her to finish and to come back out. According to Adam Patterson, about an hour after waiting, he gets a phone call from Amanda, who says that she's going to be there for a while, so Patterson says he drove away, leaving Amanda behind alone at Garner's home. But Amanda, she would not return home that evening. 2 days later, on December 7th, when she still hadn't returned home and no one could reach her, her mother, Leslie, called the police to report her daughter as missing. The Buffalo Police Department would speak to her roommate and allegedly one of the last people to see her, also known as possibly her pimp, Adam Patterson. He tells them the story of how he dropped her off at Antoine Garner's house, and when she said she was going to be taking longer than expected, he went home. He said that he was home by 8:30 p.m. that night, and he hadn't seen Amanda since. So the police interview Antoine Garner, and he tells a completely different story. According to Garner, Amanda was there to facilitate a drug deal, and she was only at his house for maybe 10 to 15 minutes before she took off and presumably left with Patterson. In an interview later with WIVB Buffalo, Garner would deny that the pair even had sex that night. He said that they had been together one time, but definitely not that night. He'd say, quote, "It was basically, thanks, I'll see you another time. That really was all that happened that night. We talked for a couple of minutes. It was basically catching up. Haven't seen you in a while. Couple of minutes of chit-chat, and then she was out the door." So now both Garner and Patterson were denying being the last ones to see her, and their stories completely contradicted one another. Knowing the caliber of these individuals, investigators were immediately worried that Amanda was met with foul play. Amanda's friends and family, particularly her mother, Leslie, they jumped into action to try to find her. They visited all of her known hangout spots, and they spoke to any acquaintances connected to her, but no one had seen or heard from Amanda since December 5th, when she was dropped off in that shady neighborhood. 5 weeks would pass with little to no indication of what happened, and then the police would receive an anonymous tip via phone call. This anonymous caller tells them that they'll find Amanda's body in a garbage bin that had been placed at the New Covenant United Church of Christ. Interestingly enough, This church was located just across the street from the home of Antoine Garner. So the police took this tip very seriously and went to investigate right away. On January 9th, 2009, they found a large garbage bin in an alcove of the parking lot. Inside was the frozen, nude body of Amanda Winkowski. She was placed face down in the bin, basically folded in half. Her head had been shaved, and her body had bruising all over it, including what looked to be finger marks on her throat. Whatever had happened to her was horrible, as she had also bitten her tongue in half. Right off the bat, with the way that Amanda's body has been found, this looks to be a murder, and the police begin their investigation as such. In speaking with the pastor of the church where the garbage can had been found, the police learned that the bin had likely been placed in the parking lot at some point overnight, because someone would have noticed if it had been there during that day prior. Unfortunately, there weren't any cameras around to capture who the culprit may have been, but soon after this grisly discovery, a neighborhood resident reported their trash can had been stolen off the curb of their home. So immediately you would be thinking, Antoine Garner, I need to speak to him. But he fully denies that he has any involvement in her death. And he even says, like, why would I be so stupid as to put her body in a trash can across the street from my house? He claims that he's being framed. Amanda's brother would be the one to identify her body. He would tell his mother, Mom, I've never seen so much blood. And she was scared to death. You can see it in her eyes. She wasn't just beaten. There were marks everywhere, to her head, to her throat, to her face. The following morning, after the body was recovered and allowed to thaw overnight, an autopsy was performed. And no one, particularly Amanda's mother, Leslie, was prepared for the results. My family is getting ready to make a big move across the ocean to a place where English isn't the spoken language. This isn't my first rodeo, so I'm making sure I'm fully prepared by learning the language ahead of time. Sure, I know I can use an app once I get there, but you'd be shocked by how much gets lost in translation. I want to talk like a local, which is why I'm excited to use Rosetta Stone, the most trusted language learning program available on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone truly immerses you in the language you want to learn and has been a trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered, including Spanish, French, Italian, German, and more. Rosetta Stone helps you to think in the language you're learning using an intuitive process that's designed for long-term retention. Their built-in true accent feature gives you feedback on your pronunciation so that you're easily understood by native speakers. They have convenient desktop and app options, so you can learn on the go, and they offer a lifetime membership that includes all 25 languages at an incredible value. And now you can save even more with 50% off. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Serial Napper listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. I hate having to figure out what the heck I'm going to eat for lunch each week, and cooking for one can be a hassle. That's why I love Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat individual meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up, making it a great option for easy on-the-go eating. Just heat and enjoy. I chose their vegan plus veggie plan, but they have a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, and Protein Plus. Plus, they have 60 add-on options for breakfast, snacks, and beverages. Every fresh, never frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Food waste is irresponsible. So, Factor puts you in control of deciding how much or how little you order each week. And you can easily pause or reschedule deliveries as necessary. For the month of April, Factor is celebrating Earth Day, so be on the lookout for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. And now, the best part. Serial Napper listeners can score an amazing deal on their first order of Factor meals. Head to factormeals.com/napper50 and use code NAPPER50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box. That's code NAPPER50 at factormeals.com/napper50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. The medical examiner's office listed Amanda's cause of death as an accidental overdose of morphine and codeine. The report didn't mention any of the bruisings or lacerations that had been noted on her body by investigators and everyone else who came into contact with the body. As you can imagine, this determination was shocking. Amanda was a known heroin addict, but the condition that her body was found in pointed towards someone physically hurting her before her death. Amanda's family weren't the only ones in complete disbelief over the results of the autopsy. The Niagara Falls Reporter stated that they spoke to sources who were present at the autopsy, and allegedly there was an argument between several Buffalo homicide detectives and the medical examiners there. The detectives believed that Amanda had not died from an overdose, but from being murdered. But sadly, it didn't matter what they believed, because once the report was written, there was no longer a crime to be investigated. Everything came to a full halt. Accidental overdose. Amanda's family asked for access to her full autopsy and toxicology report so that they could have an independent party review the results. What they discovered was that Amanda's listed cause of death wasn't the only strange thing about the report. It had been signed by 4 medical examiners, which apparently is completely unheard of in Erie County. According to a law enforcement source who spoke with the Niagara Falls Reporter, quote, "I've looked at a lot of autopsy reports, hundreds. This is completely unheard of. Very rarely you might find one signed by 2 MEs. But Amanda's was obviously signed by people who weren't even in the building when the autopsy was performed." The autopsy report also seemed to be incomplete because it had none of the physical injuries on Amanda's bodies even noted in the report. So the family felt like something just wasn't right. They decide to send the toxicology report to an independent medical examiner named John J. College. Now, when he reviewed the state's results, he came to a completely different determination. According to College, he did not believe that the amount of substances in Amanda's system would constitute an overdose. He didn't believe that it was a lethal amount. However, he did note that she had high levels of GHB, which is also known as the date rape drug, in her system. And this wasn't originally even included in the analysis of the toxicology report. When the high levels of GHB were brought to the attention of the state's medical examiner's office, they amended the report to include it. This time, they included the GHB in their analysis. They even noted that it could have contributed to accidental asphyxiation, meaning they originally stated she had overdosed on morphine and codeine, which another expert disagreed with, and they were now stating that it could have been the GHB, which they hadn't even included in their original analysis. But they still weren't addressing any of Amanda's physical injuries. Her mother, Leslie, would later say that when she pressed law enforcement about it, they told her that she may have received those injuries during a fall, or maybe even an arm wrestling match. Okay, and what about the fact that she was found naked in a garbage bin, or that her beautiful long blonde hair had been completely shaved off? Unfortunately, legally, it didn't matter. With Amanda's death not being reported as a crime, the investigators' hands were mostly tied. But that wasn't stopping her family. They requested to have Amanda's body exhumed and examined by an independent medical examiner named Dr. Sylvia Comparini. This doctor would uncover even more shocking facts surrounding Amanda's death investigation. Amanda's organs were missing, Without ever notifying her family, her brain, heart, liver, trachea, and hyoid bone had been removed and kept by the Erie County Medical Examiner's Office. A thorough second autopsy couldn't be conducted without those organs, so they had to petition the county to allow their independent medical examiner access. When access was finally granted, new details would be revealed. Details that had been kept from the family this entire time. There was DNA evidence recovered from Amanda's body. DNA that matched Adam Patterson and Antoine Garner, the last two people who had seen her alive, as well as two unidentified males and two unidentified women. The fact that DNA evidence, particularly from the last two men to see her alive, were found on Amanda's body, and they still determined her death to be an accidental overdose, is absolutely wild to me. After reviewing all of the evidence in the second autopsy, Dr. Comparini stated that she believed Amanda's body to be consistent with death due to strangulation, as indicated by the bruising that was found on her neck. She had also been beaten, and there were signs of blunt force trauma, none of which had been indicated in the first autopsy report. Though Amanda's family felt vindicated because they believed all along that Amanda had been murdered, they would still need to fight to have her manner of death changed to a homicide in order to have this investigation restarted. Now, you would think with this new report, it would be a no-brainer. Amanda had been murdered, and her killer was still walking free. But those involved with her case, those working on her case, they were not going to make it so easy. A third autopsy is ordered by the district attorney's office, and this time the pathologist ruled her cause of death should be undetermined. Yet this new finding was still not enough for the county to change Amanda's cause of death, so that something, anything could be done to find out what had happened to Amanda. They flat out refused to reopen an investigation into Amanda's death. In 2021, 13 years after Amanda had been killed, there still wasn't any movement in reopening a murder investigation. So her family, they decided to sue the county and the county's chief medical examiner. With this lawsuit, they were seeking one of three outcomes: to have a judge order Amanda's death a homicide, to have her cause of death deemed undetermined, or to have the medical examiner's office reopen an investigation and make a new determination. Absolutely reasonable considering all the evidence and the circumstances. The judge who was overseeing the lawsuit tossed it, stating that it exceeded the statute of limitations. According to this judge's ruling, Amanda's mother would have needed to challenge her cause of death within 4 months of the medical examiner's office releasing her death certificate. It was another absolute punch in the gut. Can you imagine your child being found in such a state? She did not shave her own head, freeze her own body, and then dump herself into that trash can. There have been no less than 6 different reviews to determine her cause of death, and each time it either resulted in a different outcome or it called into question the medical examiner's findings. And yet, no one will do anything about it to help find out who possibly killed her. One has to wonder why, because at this point, it feels like a massive police cover-up. The theory, it's not as far-fetched as you may think. In the months prior to Amanda's 2008 disappearance, she had actually worked as a police informant. She really enjoyed working with law enforcement, and as I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, she had goals of having a career in criminal justice. And she had even enrolled in college courses to support this dream the day before she went missing. So did someone find out that she was a snitch? Was someone in law enforcement involved in her death? The same month that Amanda disappeared, a local police officer by the name of Ryan Warmy was arrested for sexual assault, and use of a police firearm in multiple felonies. He was known to tell criminals who the snitches were. He was also known to sleep with sex workers. And it's no secret that he would frequent the bar where Amanda worked, so they would have been familiar with one another. So was he involved in Amanda's death? Did he tip off Antoine Garner that she was a snitch? These are all valid questions when you look at the deliberate effort to prevent any further progress in Amanda's investigation. Speaking of Antoine Garner, the man whose house Amanda was dropped off at, prior to her death certificate being released, he was looked at as a person of interest in her case. But once the state concluded that she died of an overdose, they pretty much just stopped looking at him. However, his DNA was found on Amanda's body. He was one of the last people to see her alive, and her body was found in a garbage bin located in a church parking lot across the street from his house. He says that someone is setting him up, but maybe he's just an idiot. Though he was never charged with anything in connection to Amanda's death, in 2013, he was arrested on multiple counts of rape of a minor. He was also charged with assault and armed robbery. His victim was beaten and choked, similarly to what had happened to Amanda. He pleaded guilty to these charges, and he was sentenced to 18 years in prison. And yet, the police, they've never reinvestigated his connection in Amanda's death. There was even an eyewitness who came forward to say that he saw Amanda's body, which was still warm, in Garner's apartment, and then he saw it again at a later date, frozen inside a garbage can. In 2016, Thomas Woodman told Amanda's mother that on December 8, 2008, 3 days after she was dropped off at that house, Garner called him and told him that he had killed Amanda, and now he needed his help getting rid of the body. Woodman claimed that he had seen her body with his own eyes, but he didn't come forward because he was afraid of retribution. He had only come forward now after Garner was behind bars and couldn't hurt him. Amanda's mother went to law enforcement with this tip and they interviewed him, but they pretty much dismissed Woodman as not a credible witness. And I get that. Woodman might have had a shady past, and you can't just trust everything that you hear. But what does he have to gain from giving this information? He could have actually been implicated in her death. He could have had a target on his back, even though Garner was in prison. And the information he gave, it is supported by a lot of other evidence. Even if Garner hadn't killed her, it's possible that something happened to her shortly after she left his place. He lived in a crime-ridden neighborhood where she would have stuck out like a sore thumb. Her body was found in a bin located just across the street from his house. So did someone maybe jump her and hurt her shortly after she left? It has been over 15 years since Amanda Winkowski was found frozen, naked, bruised, and battered with her head shaved. And the state continues to refuse to investigate her death as anything but a drug overdose. Much of the evidence points to Amanda being murdered. So why the pushback? Why the refusal to even have her cause of death be listed as undetermined so that at least it can be further investigated? In my opinion, it sounds like they thought Amanda was just another drug addict, a sex worker who wouldn't be missed. But that is just not the case. Amanda was very much loved and is very much missed by her family today, and they still demand to know what happened to her.
I live this every day. And I want Amanda to have justice. She deserves it. The truth.
So now I turn it over to you. Do you think that Amanda truly died from an accidental drug overdose? Or do you think that someone killed her? Do you believe that this could be a police cover-up? Or is it a case that has simply fallen through the cracks, plagued by red tape? Let me know what you think. That's it for me tonight. If you want to reach out, you can find me on Facebook at Serial Napper. I also have a true crime discussion group called Serial Society, and I'll have the link in my show notes. I'd love to chat with you about this case and all of the other cases that I cover. You can find my audio on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. I post all of my episodes in video format over on YouTube, so go check it out. And if you are watching on YouTube, I would love if you can give me a thumbs up and subscribe. I'm over on X, formerly known as Twitter, at @Serial_Napper, and I post things on TikTok, Serial Napper Nick, and that's all one word. Until next time, sweet dreams, stay kind, especially in the comments. Bye.